You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin on Civic Media. You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning, 7:06. Nice to have you back here on a Friday morning. It's October 24th. Parker Olson producing things down in Madison Studio A2. Madison right now, let's see, it's 28 degrees. 28 degrees in Madison right now. It's 23 here in the Chippewa Valley. It is 23 right now in Hayward, 32 in Wausau, 30 in Oshkosh. And coming up this hour, we will have our Week in Review panel, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, along with journalists Jennifer Schulze and Mark Jacob. We got things to talk about, you know, like the complete destruction of the White House East Wing. We've got a president who's bombing boats in both oceans, probably without legal justification on that. We've got plenty of other things to talk about as well. There's the whole government shutdown and whether anything is changing on that front. So all of that still to come. And then 1 hour from now, Dr. Kristen Lyerly will be dropping in, I believe, from Pittsburgh, where she was attending a conference. And by a pleasant coincidence, that's also where the Packers are playing this weekend against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so she will be reporting on heading to the game to see the Packers taking on Aaron Rodgers for the first time. Of course, she's already put into the rotation someplace here on one of these computers lying around Civic Media, the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. And you can hear that tomorrow at noon across the Civic Media radio network, or you can follow as a podcast. Subscribe over at Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. But as for the Packer game against the Steelers, well, coverage will begin Sunday at 5 p.m. Remember, it's a Sunday night game. Kickoff is at 7:20. And so you've got coverage beginning at 5 o'clock on some of the stations of the Civic Media radio network. And then tonight, there's Badger men's basketball, an exhibition game against Oklahoma at Milwaukee's Fiserv Forum. Coverage will begin at 6:30 tonight on stations in Richland Center, Amory, Wisconsin Rapids, and Ripon. Again, civicmedia.us to learn more. From WisPolitics comes word of another potential candidate for Congress up north here in the 7th Congressional District. Again, WisPolitics with the story that says that former Republican State Senator Dewey Strobel, who has represented the legislature from the Milwaukee suburbs, tells WisPolitics that he's been approached and has been having conversations about running in the 7th CD. Strobel says he's had a home in the 7th CD for nearly 25 years. Now, I don't know if that's a cabin, if it's a full-on second home, vacation home, but he's had some kind of property in the 7th CD for 25 years. And so he says he's getting calls from people interested in seeing him run for the seat that's going to be vacated by Tom Tiffany, who is now running for governor. Strobel says, quote, "I think I'm a proven conservative that stays true to their values that are important, frankly, throughout the state." If he runs, it would be the second time Dewey Strobel's run for Congress after he unsuccessfully sought a spot in the 5th Congressional District, you know, where he lives, in Saukville. Whether folks in the 7th Congressional District would take kindly to somebody, you know, coming up from the Milwaukee suburbs and saying, "I'm here to be your congressman," remains to be seen. But again, things are much more fluid in the 7th district right now. There are people who, you know, have expressed interest in running on the Republican side. There is an announcement on the Democratic side. Fred Clark, former legislator, is running for Congress up there now in the 7th district, which again is a gerrymandered district to begin with. And again, that's my fault for the Republicans gerrymandering the maps to protect Sean Duffy when I ran against him in 2012. So it is a heavier Republican district than it used to be when Dave Obey was representing it for 40 some years. But you now have a president with historically low favorability numbers and the potential for midterm elections that really don't go well for the party in power. Traditionally, they don't go well for the party that's in the White House. Now, again, in this era of Citizens United and corporate money flooding in, you know, all bets are off. But the way that things stand right now, that district should no longer be considered unwinnable by a Democrat. Frankly, any district shouldn't. Think back to 2006 when there was a similar Democratic wave, when people were very frustrated with George W. Bush and the war in Iraq. And suddenly you had legislative districts flip in Wisconsin that hadn't flipped in 80 to 90 years, where people said that, you know, the party in power has been there just a little too long, getting a little too full of themselves, too big for their britches, and voters made a change. And that very well could be happening next time as well. But again, we got to see who the candidates are. And that's where I put out this caveat as well. Anybody can say they're running for office at this point. You don't actually become a candidate with your name on the ballot until sometime next year. To get on the ballot, it's a process of collecting signatures on petitions. They're called nominating petitions. You go to door to door, or you know, you wrangle people as they're coming out of the grocery store and say, "Here, will you sign this petition?" It doesn't mean you're going to vote for that person. It just means you're signing this petition that says, yep, you could be on the ballot. And then if you get enough signatures, and there have been candidates in the past who say they're running for something and then failed to collect enough signatures to qualify to get on the ballot. Those petitions can't even be circulated until, I believe, April 15th of next year. And I believe the deadline is June 1st of next year. So it's June 1st when we will really know who is going to be on the ballot and who won't. And of course, there will be a primary in August, again, August 11th of next year. And I can't stress enough the importance of keeping that August primary in mind. There are going to be, I would dare say, as many or more primaries, contested primaries, than we might have ever seen here, with congressional district primaries, legislative district primaries, and of course, primary for governor as well. So folks are either going to be looking for you to vote on August 11th or to take part in early voting, either in person at your clerk's office or voting by mail. And before you do all that, keep in mind that there are certain politicians out there that don't want you to have that right anymore. They want to strictly limit voting by mail. They want to get rid of convenience measures like absentee ballot drop boxes. Some politicians are even willing to move absentee ballot drop boxes to keep you from using them, it seems. So remember that next year, that when we get caught up in all of the political ads, and political ads will say all kinds of wild, wacky things, you know, stick to the fundamentals of what this person's record is, what this candidate's promises have been, and then make your decision accordingly. But again, up in the 7th District, the newest story there is the potential for a suburban Milwaukee legislator to say that he's going to be running up in northern Wisconsin. We've got some high school football playoff action on some civic media stations coming up later today, and then we've got Badger football coming up this Saturday. Coverage begins at 4 o'clock on several civic media stations before the Badgers take on Oregon in a game on Saturday night. Then some other sports that you might not have heard about previously. The Badger women's hockey team, they will be playing at home in Madison at Laban Arena Saturday and Sunday at 2 p.m. They will be hosting Minnesota State Mankato. The Badger women's hockey team is now 8-0, the number one ranked team in the country. Five of those eight wins have been shutouts. The Badger women's volleyball team is 13-3, ranked 9th in the country, and they are playing out west late tonight. They're in Washington. They will take on the Huskies at 9 o'clock. You can catch that game on the Big Ten Network. The Milwaukee Bucks are in Toronto to take on the Raptors. 5:30 is the start time there. Guard Kevin Porter Jr. will miss the game with a sprained left ankle. And then finally, we have the World Series Game 1 tonight. It'll be the LA Dodgers hosting the Toronto Blue Jays starting on Friday. And so it's where we turn to noted baseball expert Parker Olson, who is not just a show producer, but is a prognosticator as well. LA Dodgers, we know what a juggernaut they look like. They going to take this thing, or is Toronto going to play the role of David versus Goliath?
I don't know. Hang on. We're not saying David versus Goliath here. They're both top five payrolls, Pat.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
Goliath versus Goliath Jr. How's that?
Thank you. I think it'll be really interesting to see if the Blue Jays bats can keep as hot as they've been. They've had some really big moments. I think they can probably I think they're going to win at least two games. I am hoping with all my being that they beat the Dodgers and win the World Series, because I cannot.
But realistically, you're saying Dodgers in six.
Probably.
Okay.
It makes me sad.
I know. It just it helps remove some of the pain of what the Brewers did. But yeah, for now, we're on Team Canada when it comes to this.
Yeah. I don't even care that the Brewers lost to the Dodgers. I just don't like the Dodgers as an organization.
Sure.
And it's
fair.
Weird to say that this year, because actually I think they have a lot of really likable guys this year. I think this is one of their more likable teams ever.
I like that you're so emotionally torn on the Dodgers. One moment you're channeling Kylo Ren. Yes, let the hate flow through you.
War!
Yeah. And other times it's like, oh, they're a cute little fluffy team. They're a bunch of lovable scamps, little Dodgers.
I like Shohei. I like Freddie Freeman.
Yeah.
They don't have Manny Machado. That's a good thing.
That is very key that they don't have Manny Machado anymore. That does make them infinitely more likable as a result. So game one of the World Series will get started tonight. Coming up later today across the Civic Media Radio Network, Matt and Air on Air. We just had Greg Bach here. He and Jane Matt and Air will be along at 9 o'clock, and just after 10 o'clock, they will be talking to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area and Civic Media's political editor. And I don't know what's on the docket, but based on Dan Schaefer's latest commentary, I sense that it might also include the forthcoming expansion project for I-94 going right through the middle of Milwaukee. Dan has been a longtime critic of the proposal to expand, to add another lane. You know, this whole notion of, you know, just paving your way to prosperity. Let's just add a you know, an eighth lane and a ninth lane, and maybe that'll finally do the trick. Dan has a lot to say about what our transportation system should look like around Wisconsin and specifically through the Milwaukee area. So be on the lookout for that. Then on the Maggie Dawn Show later, coming up at 4 o'clock, she will be talking to State Senator Kristen Dassler Offheim, and they will be talking about the latest increases in price, the big increases in price coming to health insurance plans that are purchased on the marketplace through the Affordable Care Act. And she will talk a bit more about insurance coverage in Wisconsin. Are there things the legislature can do to make sure that insurance covers more things that it should? And then the whole crisis of insurance companies that are hiking prices because they're not getting the support that we used to get from Congress and the federal government. It's what's led to this shutdown that is continuing, that Republicans could end today if they just wanted to keep the rest of you and all Americans from experiencing huge spikes in health insurance premiums. They have the opportunity to do that, but would rather see pain inflicted, including sharply reduced SNAP benefits. And I've just written a story about that that you can find on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. Our Week in Review panel is coming up here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Coming up tomorrow morning, you can hear Amicus, a law review with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. Saturday mornings, 9 to 11, replayed on Sunday. Learn more at civicmedia.us. You can also subscribe to Indistinct Chatter from Jennifer Schulze on Substack. Search for @newsjennifer. And, of course, Mark Jacob has his Stop the Presses newsletter, stopthepresses.news, and also through couriernewsroom.com. And this week, his column is entitled, My Exclusive Trump-Era Tour Inside the Media's Brain. What Were America's Journalists Thinking? I Have Strong Suspicions. This one is a must-read, and I bring up those three people because those three people constitute our Week in Review panel, and they are joining us now, including a very frozen Ms. Schulze, who may be in Chicagoland, where I'm guessing it's about 35, 36, but that is not sitting well with you.
No, man, I wasn't ready for this. I know, it's the end of October, but it's too cold.
I said, Alicia writes, I share Jennifer's horror at the cold weather, and Alicia's up in one of the warm spots in the state right now with temperatures in the mid-30s. You know, it's 19 in Hayward right now. So this is what's coming. You knew what you were getting into when you agreed to live here in the great American Midwest. That doesn't make her feel any better. Like, I signed up for this. I get it. Mark, we're gonna talk about your column about the media's brain in just a little bit here. And Jennifer, we're gonna get to demolition of the White House, but we got to start with something a little more tongue in cheek here, because otherwise it just kind of gets depressing. And Jim Santel, I recalled this president and then a Secretary of Defense talking all about how, you know, we can't have any more fat generals and everybody's got to shape up. And meanwhile, they're recruiting like crazy for ICE, you know, Trump's own little secret police force. How are they doing over there?
Apparently not well, not surprisingly. There are apparently some lying, believe it or not, going on in applications about everything from background to old physical status. And many of the recruits, so to speak, cannot run a mile, cannot do some push-ups, some sit-ups within, admittedly, it's a 14 or 15 minute period. But still, major problems here athletically. And as a result, we've got folks who are sitting around at desks who cannot be out there, presumably waiting for their termination notices, for those to happen. This is a tongue-in-cheek story in the midst of everything else that is disastrous in America. On the other hand, it's a reflection of wild rank incompetence, which is what we've also seen in this administration. And it explains what I've often questioned myself, which is, who are these people? We're out there now doing this work that I could never imagine former ICE agents doing. And that's your answer. They're not qualified. They're not competent, with due respect, intellectually, in terms of their backgrounds. And now it turns out that we are putting people on the streets who are physically, again, giving them guns and physically unable to do this job. This is a serious matter. Again, overlaying all the other problems with the ICE action.
I think that there was an image problem already with things that this administration was doing. But then, Jennifer, you take a president promising not to cause any harm to the White House in adding some glitzy new ballroom. And what started as tearing down the facade turned into tearing down the whole freaking East Wing of the White House. And I don't know that. The national media is covering this in the, again, I get that it's just a structure, but I still think, Jennifer, if this were, say, Barack Obama showed up with bulldozers, I think the impeachment hearings would already be underway.
There's so many things wrong with what's happening, and I think how it's being covered, it's hard to know where to start. I would like to say, though, it happened very quickly. We went a week ago from we're going to do some remodeling to build this ballroom, to it is completely gone. I was in Washington for the last couple of days. You can't see it from the street, but people, and I couldn't see it from my flight, but some people took pictures flying out of D.C. yesterday. From the air, you can see it is just, it's completely gone. So again, we went from, I'm just going to do a little tweaking here, to gone, and not going through any of the proper procedures. And the cost too is going to be $200 million. Now it's who knows, and Apple's helping pay for it. The whole thing is a mess, and I think people are rightly concerned about it.
Well, Pat, the fact that the Treasury Secretary has told those employees in the building just adjacent, when you look out your windows, keep your phones down. Yeah. That, again, we call that, you know, revelation of guilt. If you're proud of this, if there's nothing to be putting aside here, you let people do that. That also speaks volumes about what this administration is doing.
Yeah, Jim Colbert last night said that they weren't letting them take any pictures so they could claim that the East Wing hanged itself.
Yes, right, right.
Can you always get in an Epstein file reference there? But Mark, this is not just a metaphor in and of itself, but to Jennifer's point, a candidate in Trump who says one thing and says, I'm just going after the bad guys, but now is rounding up every housekeeper, every childcare provider, every day laborer. So much for going after just the terrorists. I mean, this is very par for the course for this guy.
Well, this is what astounds me as far as news coverage, that you've got a guy who's been lying to you for a decade. Yet every day he comes out and says something new, and you act as if this might be the one time he's telling the truth. And you tell your audience, well, here's what he said. You know, I mean, you know, it's part of being a good journalist is learning from experience. And this guy is a liar. I mean, the East Wing thing is a stark example of that. And the New York Times actually helped him lie by saying, well, you know, nobody thought at the time that it was realistic that they'd leave the East Wing alone. So all right. So we knew he was lying then. So it's okay. He's lying now. There's just such a difference in how everyone else is judged and how Donald Trump is judged.
It's a pattern, and patterns are worthy of being reported on. We will continue the conversation here with Mark Jacob and Jennifer Schulze and Jim Santel coming up in just a bit. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Our Week in Review panel coming up in just a bit. And then in the next hour, Dr. Kristen Lyerly and also Mike Clemens will join us to talk a little sports. Next week on the program, we'll talk to Lucy Ripp from A Better Wisconsin Together. We'll talk to Jim Renicki from the Friends of the Apostle Islands. We'll talk to Ruth Conniff from the Wisconsin Examiner. And we'll visit with Ingrid Kundinger. Sorry, didn't have her last name in front of me here. Ingrid Kundinger with the Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources. There are all kinds of folks who are having to find new Medicare Advantage plans because their current ones are being dropped. And so we'll talk more about the resources that are available in finding a new Medicare plan for yourself, or maybe you are a caregiver or an adult child to a parent. So that will be coming up, all those guests and more, next week. All right, I'm joined once again by former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, Mark Jacob, Jennifer Schulze. And Mark, we're going to start with you because your latest Stop the Presses newsletter has the title, My Exclusive Trump-Era Tour Inside the Media's Brain, What Were America's Journalists Thinking? I Have Strong Suspicions. It's a very fascinating timeline that captures the collective thought of the national media. Tell us more.
Yeah, I was trying to explain the whole media evolution here, you know, how the media was fascinated by Trump and you know, in the 2016 and 2015, and they were using it, you know, to get a Trump bump. You know, if you remember, you know, the CBS CEO declared it may not be good for America, but it's damn good for CBS, you know, and how the media then, you know, became aghast that the American public was embracing all these bigoted comments and crazy comments by Trump, that they won. And then the media said, well, it's not our fault that he won. And I was just trying to get through the whole mindset of then being bored by Biden and not, there's no Biden bump. And so they wanted, you know, and the idea that the media is only out for itself, you know, in a lot of ways. And I, the the way I did it was I kind of imagined, you know, the old movie Fantastic Voyage or Inner Space, where people shrink themselves and go inside a human body. And in the same way, I was, you know, exploring the media's brain, you know, and so, you know, and having worked in the media for 40 years, I think I have a pretty good idea of why the media does bad things.
Well, it explains it so well in just a whole bunch of short little statements, like, you know, 2015, Trump is running for president. We'll cover him as a carny show. 2016, Trump just invited the Russians to interfere in our elections. He's kidding, right? 2018, let's not call his lies lies. That'll make us look mean. 2020, Trump is lying about COVID, but let's save it for the book. Just all these little short statements that capture so perfectly where the national media was going with this and why so many of us were tearing out our hair in the process.
And it's still happening.
Now, that's still happening, yes. Well, I didn't want to scroll down too far because I thought it might depress me with a spoiler alert. But again, for the whole thing, stopthepresses.news. And Jennifer, we laugh only to mask the pain of watching so many national newsrooms do exactly the kinds of things Mark is talking about.
Well, I told Mark how much I appreciated his column, but that it also really depressed me.
Yes.
But I do think there's a value in seeing the history laid out that way and a reminder. Like, we know generally, right, we don't like a lot of things about how Trump is covered. But then when you see it year by year or for 10 years, you know, it's like a kick in the head again, like, geez. Right? Because we do live in sort of a short attention span world right now. And so I really like what Mark did, and it left me just a puddle on the floor.
the short attention span could not capture it better, because just early this morning I saw a report about how all these rich guys and hedge funds are trying to raise money from one another to help feed the hungry around the world. Well, we had something doing that, USAID, right. But that's like in the distant past now. The outrage has completely settled down, even as people continue starving to death as a result of it. But we always have to move on to the next thing. In fact, Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, the next thing hit us, you know, this week with Trump giving another one of his pardons to criminals, to which I again say, parenthetically, elect a criminal as president, expect the other criminals to be freed from the prison and other people to take their place who are not criminals. But anyway, he pardoned some big shot in the cryptocurrency world, where it turns out the Trump administration or the Trump family has some business connections.
And absolutely, this fellow is referred to as CZ. He is a billionaire. He's the founder of this cryptocurrency exchange called Binance. And the thing that strikes me, and I think other people, both inside and outside law enforcement, this is not someone who made some modest false statements on some documents reporting to the government what his funding was or what the income was. This is a fellow engaged in rampant money laundering. That is no small thing. Way back in 2023, he served 4 months, probably a very light sentence to begin with. And we get then this representation that this is in the interest of reversing the Biden animosity toward cryptocurrency. We're now opening up our nation to that. Caroline Leavitt says the Biden administration's war on crypto is now over. It's not a war on crypto, Caroline. It's a war on crime. And that's what it was. That's what this fellow did. He got a very light sentence. And now, as you're saying, Pat, it is obviously clear that he did this and got this a huge benefit from the president because of his connections with the family. President, once again, reminded, I'm sure your listeners know this, this is one of those things James Madison put in the Constitution, completely unchecked. No yes. Capacity to push back on this at all.
No checking whatsoever. And as noted by Tommy Vitor from Pod Save America, Binance willingly failed to report transactions on its platform by Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Hamas, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. But then Trump's crypto company made a multi-billion dollar deal in partnership with Binance. And so Trump gave the founder of Binance a pardon. And he says, shockingly brazen corruption. Well, Mark, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. It's brazen corruption. It should be shocking. I don't know that anybody really covered this in the past day or two.
No, well, not enough. But I mean, I just wonder whether there's a price list for pardons somewhere. You know, whether
could be.
I mean, and the thing that's really frightening about Trump, as he's not, it's really better to not view him and the Republicans as a political movement. Viewing them as an organized crime ring is better. You understand better what's going on here, because you know Trump clearly is giving pardons to people who benefit his own family's personal business, just in this case, and he keeps on announcing these kind of minor aid packages for different states, you know, states that he is that have disasters, and he always mentions whether the state voted for him in past elections.
Yes,
and the signal's clear that if you vote for him, you're going to get money from the federal government. If you don't vote for him, we're going to cancel all the aid. And he's in the process of doing that during the shutdown. He's cutting all this stuff to blue states. So he's not the president for the entire people. He really is just a crime boss.
He thinks he's getting away with it. But Jennifer, you know, you and others have taken note that it's one thing to funnel money from, you know, to your friends and away from your perceived foes. But at the same time, as you noted yesterday, your healthcare premiums are going to be going up like 500% so that Trump can use taxpayer funds to do things like, you know, build concentration camps for migrants. People can connect those dots. Nope. Did you mute yourself there, Jennifer? We're having a tough time hearing you. There we go. Okay. Go ahead, Jennifer.
70% of Americans think that the ACA subsidies should be extended. And so that tells me right there that people are aware and ticked off about what's happening. And it isn't just the ACA subsidies. Healthcare premiums are going up across the board. People are getting those notices now. And I think it is going to be just a devastating thing to people across the board. And we just don't fully understand how bad it's going to be. And Republicans don't seem really to be interested in that. And I do think it vindicates the Democrat strategy of saying that they were fighting over this government shutdown about the healthcare subsidies. This is really going to hurt people in untold ways.
Yes. But people are at least seeing these things.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And that thing, they can connect the dots. They can see the yes. price increases going up. They can see that there's a president that is instead taking, you know, demolition crews to the White House, but there's still the other things that they can't see. And Jim, I wanted you to talk briefly about the shadow docket,
yes.
which again is another way for the Supreme Court to make what are supposed to be emergency rulings that don't require, you know, a big lengthy dissertation with the legal reasoning. But the Brennan Center put out an updated tracker this week with shockingly, you know, large number of cases, significant cases, where the orders were given on the shadow docket without any real legal reasoning. It's just so authoritarian, I guess you could say.
Absolutely. And it's also a departure. A little statistic here, which the Brennan Center may or may not have noted. Two terms of both Obama and Bush, 16 years, that entire period of time, those two administrations petitioned the Supreme Court for emergency relief a whopping eight times, and the Supreme Court granted them four. In his first term, Donald Trump sought relief in this way 40 times, and now obviously he's on the record, he's moving in that direction once again. And note that these are, as you said, Pat, these are not small ticket items. These are everything from funding of academic institutions to NIH grants. It is overseas funding. And the one that you especially look to is a case that they've now put on the merits docket, which is a situation where they do, in fact, think about these things and have oral argument and have petitions and memorandums written by the attorneys, all those kinds of things, is this case involving the FTC commissioner. 90 years ago, the Supreme Court said, you can't terminate people who are part of independent agencies. It's a case called Humphrey's Executor. Encourage your listeners to keep that in mind. It appears that the Supreme Court is about to overturn that. At that time, telling FDR, you can't do this. Now, 2025, 2026, it appears the Supreme Court is about to overturn Humphrey's Executor and give this president, again, on the merits docket, following the shadow docket, this complete authority. It is a wild ride through a lack of explanation. There's no transparency. Americans should demand more. John Roberts, once again, what are you doing? What are you doing?
And if they don't, then Mark, at least they coming back from the things they can't see to the things they can see. Prices, for example, the consumer price index number just came out. It rose 3% from a year earlier. So that's inflation is accelerating slightly in numbers that were delayed because of the government shutdown. But again, people note the price tags, Mark. This still has plenty of opportunity to come back and bite Trump in the bottom between now and the midterms.
Yeah. Oh, no question. Actually, I'm surprised that the impact of the tariffs isn't worse. And I think that part of it is that Trump has pressured corporations to eat some of the what they pay. You know, and it's not foreign countries. You know, as Trump, you know, lied for a long time saying foreign countries are going to pay the tariffs. No, they're not. American corporations are paying them, and American consumers are paying them.
Yeah.
But it hasn't been as much on consumers yet. I think they're trying to hold the line so they don't get abused by Trump. But that's got to end at some point.
So we can review panel.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see it. The thing, Pat, is that because of the shutdown and because Trump doesn't like government statistics, we may not see too many more, you know, very quickly.
Okay. Thank you, Mark Jacob, Jim Zemtel, Jennifer Schulze. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Oh, with the sun coming up later, I finally got a chance to take a gander outside, and the lawn is just all frosty, and it's a little foggy out there, so that could translate into some freezing fog and some slippery bridge decks and ramps, so take it easy if you haven't been on the roads yet out there. One last go-around with former U.S. Attorney Jim Zemtel and journalist Mark Jacob and Jennifer Schulze, and I was mentioning before, you know, people are picking up on inflation. They're also picking up on, you know, the loss of benefits coming through the big bloated boondoggle. And my latest article on our website, upnorthnewswi.com, is called Weaponizing Red Tape, How Wisconsin Families on SNAP Could Go Hungry Soon. And yet you look at the comments under it on social media already, Jennifer, and so much of the commentary is, well, you know, these are all lazy people who, you know, need to get a job, blah, blah, blah. Never mind that we're in full employment. And I noted that you put up a post from one of my favorite posters out there who said, just a thought, how about we stop shaming the poor for buying things that may not be essential and start shaming the rich for making a profit off things that are essential? I don't know if we're making that point yet, but I feel like a corner is there to be turned.
I think the shaming of poor people is an ongoing problem in the country, and it's only made worse with the Trump administration. You know, there are people who, for a lot of reasons, can't work, can't afford basic needs, and we are a big, rich country, and we ought to be able to help them. And you saw it in the Medicaid debate where, well, they're just, you know, young men sitting on in their mother's basement playing video games, not working. And the fact is, that's not true. None of that is true. People aren't cheating. They're not skirting working. They're really, truly people in need. And the idea that we're pretending otherwise as a political talking point is so offensive to me. I cannot stand it.
Mm-hmm. Jim, one of the stories you're following is that Trump is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to review deployment of the Illinois National Guard. What's happening there? And then we're going to check out the militarization of Chicago from Mark's standpoint. But what's happening in court, Jim?
Right. This comes out of the Seventh Circuit, which we talked about last week. This is the Seventh Circuit basically upholding the lower court's decision, saying you can't deploy them. They can hang around, but they should not go in. The Seventh Circuit says, you know what? Right there in Chicago, where Jennifer and Mark are, that's not an insurrection. There's no rebellion going on, it turns out there. The Seventh Circuit says, nope, you're wrong about this, Mr. President. And he, of course, through our Department of Justice, your Department of Justice, now seeking review of that before the United States Supreme Court, would plainly also impact other cities. They haven't yet granted review of that, but plainly they are certainly looking at this seriously. And again, what a dramatic thing that would be if the Supreme Court says, yes, indeed, this president now even has the power to deploy the National Guard, contrary to what governors want, and can do it in a situation where you have, as the judges have said in other places, sticks and stones, some violence, but nowhere near an insurrection. Not is that the next thing that's coming out of our Supreme Court? Maybe
well,
so.
And what makes it so weird, Mark, is these are the people that for decades told us they are against an overbearing federal government. And it's all about states' rights. And a governor should be able to stand in the schoolhouse door, basically. They sure seem to have flipped real quick now that they have power of the whole federal government to want a big federal government.
Right. It makes you wonder whether they believed any of the things they were saying in the past, of course. You know, the thing that people need to understand, if you live in Chicago, you know this, but the federal government at this point under Trump is bringing violence to big cities. It's not solving violence. It's not preventing violence. It is bringing violence. It's tear gassing people in neighborhoods. It's tackling people who are just standing there watching as their neighbors are being dragged away. I mean, people need to understand what's going on here. And it is that the federal government is persecuting the city of Chicago. And, you know, and the only thing good about this, in my mind, is that people of Chicago aren't taking it. And
no, they are not.
Yeah, you're getting a lot of community groups who are like passing out whistles. There's these whistle brigades now where if you see ICE, you will blow the whistle to warn your neighbors. We like immigrants in Chicago. We want them. They help make Chicago better. And we don't need Trump persecuting immigrants in our city. They're our neighbors. They make things better here. They don't make things worse. And so we're just totally offended by this and feel like we're being persecuted by the federal government.
And Jennifer, you've made note that local media there had been doing a good job of covering the deployment and the issues involved. Do you find that that's still the case?
I do. I also want to add, my husband and I went to Little Village, one of the neighborhoods that's been really hit hard by ICE, especially in the last couple of days. We went there last night for dinner to help support the community. And I have to say, it was a terrible sight. Restaurants that are normally open and thriving were all closed. And this is at 6 o'clock at night. The streets were empty. I mean, it was really terrible. And Trump is doing that to America. It was like COVID. We did find a place that was open. There were barely any people in there. Of course, the folks that were working there were happy to see us. But Trump is doing that to Chicago on purpose. As Mark said, we've got crime. We're a big city. Things happen. But it is not out of control. Trump's forces are making it out of control. They are tear gassing people. They are getting people are hiding in their homes. It was just a really depressing sight for me. And I want to go back this weekend and help support those businesses again, because it's really terrible what Trump's doing to them.
Well, yeah, it really is an invasion. They talk about, that migration, migrants are the invasion. No, the invasion is actually coming from, a big government that is out of control. Jennifer Schulze, catch what she does on Substack. Search for News Jennifer. Mark Jacob has the Stop the Presses newsletter, stopthepresses.news. Jim Santel will have Amicus, a law review tomorrow morning at 9 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks to all three of you. Have a good start to the weekend.
You too.
Take care, everybody.
All right. When we come back, Dr. Kristen Lyerly will be here, and we'll also talk to Mike Clemens talking about sports and a story about a viral tweet that he finally got to ask Aaron Rodgers about. That's coming up after the news. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.